Welcome to Ringside with Arif Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Avalanche beat writer for Colorado Hockey Now, podcaster for Mile High Sports. Coming to you Sunday afternoon, October 13, following the Avalanche's home opener loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets at Ball Arena on Saturday. And there is a lot to unfold here because we are now witnessing the first 0-2 start for the Avalanche. And I mean, certainly as long as I've been doing this, I wish I fact-checked it, but definitely in the last 5 years. But we're witnessing something different. We're witnessing a team that we've talked about over the last several weeks, maybe about a month since the opening of training camp, since during the offseason with all the new pieces, all the missing uncertainty from this lineup. It's a roster that expected to struggle in October, and that kind of got even more elevated when we realized heading into training camp that Arturi Lehkonen was not going to be ready. And then it got elevated even more after the game in Vegas where Jonathan Drouin suffered an upper body injury. And basically where we're at is the Colorado Avalanche have three top six forwards, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Casey Mittelstadt. It's a pretty solid group. And then they have everybody else. They have their third line center slash sometimes second line winger finally in Ross Colton. They have third line winger in Logan O'Connor. They have third slash what I think is a fourth line winger in Miles Wood. And then they have a couple of rookies, well, three rookies to be exact. They have fourth liner Joel Kiviranta, and then they have three rookies in my mind, Ivan, Nikolai Kovalenko, and Callum Ritchie. And then, of course, you have Chris Wagner, who came in, gets a penalty on his first shift, barely plays, and he's only in the lineup because Jonathan Drouin is hurt. It's not looking great. And this was the conversation all along, but the goaltending has completely dominated every other conversation. And I talked about this a couple days ago after the loss to Vegas. We talked so much about the new third pair, about Calvin DeHaan coming in to replace Jack Johnson as that veteran left shot defenseman on the third pair, about how you have guys like Sam Malinsky and Oliver Shillington and what used to be Erik Brännström is now John Ludvig. You have all of these guys trying to figure out exactly how to make it work on that third pair. And obviously Sam Malinsky ended up being the one that stood out. And in the middle of all of that, and in the middle of all of the offensive uncertainty, without Lehkonen, now without Drouin, without Val Nichushkin, without Gabe Landeskog, I talked about this after the game against Vegas. It feels like deja vu. Not a lot of conversations, at least with me. Again, deja vu. I said this a couple days ago about the goaltending, and I thought coming out of the Vegas game that we were looking at a game that basically was the game one against Winnipeg. That's what it was. It was the Avalanche scoring a lot of goals, but Alexander Georgiev letting in more than that on fewer shots, and Colorado hanging around because their offense is so dynamic and explosive. But after that game one loss against the Winnipeg Jets, Georgiev bounced back. And the Avalanche won four straight, and then they took game one in Dallas. But that just didn't happen this time. Georgiev didn't bounce back. In fact, Georgiev played worse. He let in three goals on nine shots to the Columbus Blue Jackets, the ones that are missing their captain in Boone Jenner, the ones that are obviously suffering from the tragedy that was the loss of Johnny Gaudreau over the summer. They're not a team that people are expecting to be one of the best in the NHL. And rather than Georgiev using that as an opportunity to bounce back, he let in instead two goals in the first period. Colorado gets one back with 8 seconds remaining from a sick power play goal from Nathan MacKinnon. And then you get into the second period and Georgiev lets in a goal on his first shot against. Three goals on nine shots. They replace him with Justus Annunen again. And I gave Justus a pass for his performance against Vegas, two goals on five shots, because he came in cold off the bench on opening night, not expecting to play, comes in cold against a strong team in a tough environment at T-Mobile Arena. That's not an easy place to play. So he comes in to that situation, lets in two goals on five shots, and the Avalanche, of course, end up losing that game. I was willing to give him a pass. But against the Columbus Blue Jackets, this time Eustace came in. It was 3-1. You know, Georgiev just let in a goal on his first shot against in the second period, and Bednar said, enough is enough, and brings in Eustace Annanen. On the ensuing shift, 15 seconds later, Miles Wood scores its 3-2. 91 seconds later, Casey Mittelstadt scores its 3-3. Colorado scored two goals before Eustace faced a shot. And then when he finally faced his first shot, the Columbus Blue Jackets scored. They regained the 4-3 lead, and of course they held that lead the rest of the way because they ended up making it 5-3. Take it to the third period. Ross Colton scored on a nice feed from Nathan MacKinnon to make it 5-4 with a minute 20 left, and then a very strange penalty on Casey Mittelstadt, and then the empty netter, obviously, and it's 6-4. But the game, to me, was lost with that Eustace Annanen fourth goal, obviously. But, you know, it didn't even end up being the actual game-winning goal because of the Colton goal. But it was the goal that gave... So, game-winning goals are a very strange statistic because, obviously, it's always going to be the goal that's one more than what the other team scored. To me, the turning point, you know, it's never going to be counted always as the game-winning goal, but the turning point is the goal that gives your team a lead that you never relinquish. So... it was 3-3, despite the Avalanche getting four goals, which means the difference maker was Columbus's fifth goal. It was 3-3. The goal that made it 4-3 gave Columbus a lead, and they held the lead the rest of the way. They had a 4-3 lead, then they had a 5-3 lead, then Colorado made it 5-4, but then they made it 6-4. That's the turning point goal. The turning point goal was that Eustace Annanen goal. It was the Avalanche coming into that play, tied at 3 apiece. They've taken all momentum. They reinvigorated the bench. They got a jolt from the Georgiev pull. Miles Wood scores. That's the third line with Parker Kelly and Logan O'Connor, the new look third line. After Miles Wood scores, you get a goal from Casey Mittelstadt on the second line. Well, it was a power play goal to be exact. And then Annanen lets the game get away. And then, for good measure, he lets in a second goal on the fifth shot again. So two goals on five shots. Same exact thing. And those obviously ended up being the only two goals he let in. But he let in two goals on his first five shots, just like he let in two goals on five shots against the Vegas Golden Knights two nights earlier. Annanen ended up making 11 saves on 13 shots. But had he kept the Avalanche in the game at 3-3, it's a different ball game. The reality is sometimes when a goalie comes in, you know, it's 7-2, 6-1, it's 5-0, it's 4-1. Like, you have large deficits that you got to pull from. Eustace came in when the Avalanche were down two goals. Just over 21 minutes into the game. I think it was 21:57 to be exact. Early second period, down two goals, you're the Colorado Avalanche. You have this high-flying offense. You're facing the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are probably going to have another year of, you know, struggles. It's a winnable game. And not only is it a winnable game when you come in, but the Avalanche quickly score twice in 91 seconds, 15 seconds after the 3-1 goal that even brought you into the game. Now it's 3-3. You have a clean slate. You haven't faced a shot yet. There's like 36, 37 minutes left in the game, and it's a tie game. That's no longer, I'm coming in here to do cleanup work. That's, I'm coming in here to win this thing. And then he lets in a goal on his first shot against. Goaltending has been a giant, massive issue. I don't want to say I didn't talk about or think about goaltending at all during the offseason. It obviously wasn't my main conversation. But it was a thought, and it was a thought many, many times because it wasn't Georgiev that I struggled with thinking of. It was Eustace Annanen. It was the fact that in order for Georgiev to not be overplayed the way he was in years past, in order for Georgiev to not have to, you know, play 60 plus games and be atop the NHL leaderboard in wins because of how many games he's playing, he needs a backup that he could trust. He had it in Pavel Francouz a couple years ago when he was healthy, and every time he wasn't healthy, he didn't have it. And then he didn't have it at all last year because it was Ivan Prosvetov, which was a failed experiment. And then it was Eustace Annanen at the end when he finally got a few wins under his belt and it started to make sense. but it was too little too late. Georgiev had already been overplayed. He had already been on pace to hit that 60-plus game mark out of 82 games, which he did 2 years in a row, and it was too little too late. So the conversation that I had this summer was, Eustace gets a 2-year deal at $837,500, you know, $837,000, $500. He's getting an opportunity to be the backup this year with an opportunity to say, hey, if I stick out, if I step up, I can be the 1A, 1B. I can be one of, you know, either the 1A or the 1B next year, making $837,000. And that's kind of the hope the Avalanche have for him. And they still do have that hope for him because they need low budget goaltending, making $837,000 as one of your tandem guys. But it was just, it wasn't enough games to know for sure that he's going to be the guy. It wasn't enough games to know that he's going to be the guy to shoulder the load of a backup goalie that needs to play 25 to 28, maybe even 30 games to give their starter some time off. And the question was, can he be that guy? And so far the answer is no. Against the Columbus Blue Jackets, it was enough for me to be able to say that. Against the Vegas Golden Knights, it wasn't. Does he have time to rebound? Yes, of course. There's 80 games left in the season. Hell, he hasn't even gotten a start yet. When he gets a start, he'll finally get an opportunity to show what he can do. But he hasn't even gotten a start yet. So admittedly, you know, it would be unfair to say that he's completely washed or he needs to be replaced. Does what he did against the Blue Jackets inspire confidence? Sure as hell not. But let's get him a start. Let's get him some opportunities to really determine if he can play. The problem is, because of what's happened in the first two games, we'll see what happens on Monday against the New York Islanders. I'm assuming Georgiev's going to get that start from what Jared Bednar said today at practice. But the problem is that right now, we're in a situation where Eustace Annan isn't coming in. Because usually, Georgiev has strong starts to the season. He was great to start the year 2 years ago, and he was excellent last year to start the year. The problem now isn't, or sorry, the scenario we're in now isn't that Annan comes in and gets a start to show what he can do to see if he can be that stable backup like he was late last season. Now when he comes in, there is pressure. There is added pressure that if I don't play good, I'm the other guy that's also not playing well. The starter is struggling and so am I, and now we need to look elsewhere, which they kind of are because they claimed Kaapo Kähkönen off waivers from the Winnipeg Jets and he's still dealing with immigration. Jared Bednar said we're probably not going to hear from him until probably at least Tuesday. So here we are now trying to figure out what the Avalanche are going to do in goal, because Eustace hasn't even gotten a chance to start yet. But what he's done so far doesn't really inspire much confidence, because by my math, he's faced 18 shots and he's let in 4 goals. By my math, Alexander Georgiev's faced 25 shots and he's only made 17 saves. He's let in 8 goals. Like, it is not bad goaltending. It is atrociously unplayable goaltending. And if this is the trend that's going to continue, it's going to be hard for the Avalanche to focus on just weathering the storm when goaltending is giving them a whole nother reason to be stressed and worried during a time period where they don't have a lot of options at offense. And despite all of that, they have 8 goals in 2 games. They are scoring 4 goals per game. They faced a Stanley Cup championship goalie in Aiden Hill and a strong Vegas Golden Knights team, and they scored 4 goals. And then they faced a team lower in the standings, expectation at least, in the Columbus Blue Jackets, and they again scored 4 goals. They're about to face the New York Islanders, who were shut out in Dallas on Saturday. Patrick Waugh's return to Ball Arena. They were shut out in Dallas on Saturday, and they're about to come to Ball Arena, having scored nothing on Jake Oettinger, to either face Georgiev or Eustace Annan, and hopefully not both again. It's going to be a very, very, very strange, very interesting and fascinating month for the Avalanche, because goaltending and what the Avalanche have seen from their two guys is going to create an entire new storyline and something that we have to focus on. I don't know how the season is going to play out at goalie. I don't know if Kaapo Kähkönen is going to come in and settle the waters. I don't know if Georgiev is going to bounce back and settle things down. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. All I do know is that the Avalanche right now are in a situation where they feel they can't even make a single mistake without it ending up in the back of their net. Against the Vegas Golden Knights, every time they pulled within one after the 3-1 goal, every time they pulled within one, Vegas quickly made it a two-goal game again. And against the Columbus Blue Jackets, they scored two goals in 91 seconds. The home crowd is feeling it. We're 22, 23 minutes into the game. It's 3-3. It's a winnable game. You think, okay, great. Here's where the Avalanche turn it on and win 6-4 or 6-3. And then it quickly gets away from them again because of another bad goal. So we'll see how it plays out. I do want to touch on a few more things. Number one, Casey Mittelstadt has been very good in my eyes. I wrote about this yesterday for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, the good and the bad. Good and bad, I should say. It's an article I do after every game highlighting one good and one bad player in each game. And Casey was my good. And the reason why he was my good, and I know he scored on the power play, so it doesn't exactly, you know, it's not the same apples to oranges, you know, comparison to what I'm about to say about the top six. But the reality is, the Avalanche last year had Rantanen, Drouin, Rantanen, Drouin, Nichushkin, and Lehkonen all healthy and ready to go for opening night, with Nathan MacKinnon centering the top right line and Ryan Johansson centering line two. The Johansson experiment failed and fell flat on its face, obviously. Well documented. They've traded him. They had to attach a first rounder to him. They got Sean Walker. Bet they wish they still had that first rounder this year. But last year, the Avalanche had second line wingers and no second line center. Mittelstadt played with Nichushkin, with Drouin, with Lehkonen, with Mikko. He played with those top four guys in the regular season and then in the playoffs. He obviously played with Zach Parise also. But he played with strong wingers. Now, here you are, fast forward a year later from opening night of last season. The Avalanche have their second line center and they don't have second line wingers. Casey Mittelstadt is a playmaker. But without guys that are going to put the puck in the net, he's the one that has to do it. And he has two goals in two games. I think it's great what he's been doing. He's been stuck in a tough situation because you know that when Lehkonen and Val are out, Nate's getting the better wingers. And he did for opening night. He got Drouin and Mikko Rantanen. And then when Drouin went out, all that does is trickle down the lineup. Now Kovalenko's going up. Now Colton's switching to the wing. And obviously you could argue, and probably so, right now Colton's a better winger than Nikolai Kovalenko. But Mittelstadt's getting the scraps of the lineup. He's getting the third line center shifted to the wing. He's getting the two rookies. He's getting the 19-year-old that looks way out of place in the NHL. Let's call it what it is for Callum Ritchie. And he's got two goals in two games. And I did want to highlight that because I think Casey Mittelstadt is going to be a big piece of this team this year. He's got to shoulder a lot of the load right now without a lot of these guys missing and without Jonathan Drouin also there. You saw the Avalanche even load up at some points with Casey playing on the wing with Mikko and Nate because they have no other options. So I did want to shout him out. And then I want to close off the podcast by touching on that Monday return. Patrick Waugh coaches the New York Islanders, and he's coming back to Ball Arena where he has not been since he resigned from his post and quit on the Avs as head coach back in August of 2016. It is mind-boggling to think that it's been 8 years since then. But I am so excited to see what happens because there's many ways to go about this. Is the Jumbotron and the team going to acknowledge him on that level? Probably not. Yes, this is a great. Yes, this is a Hall of Famer. His jersey's hung in the rafters. Well, probably not. Like, they might. I genuinely don't know. And I'm really curious to see if they do. But also, how is the crowd going to react to him? How is Patrick Waugh going to react when he holds his media availability Monday morning after morning skate? There's a lot to consider here, and I'm genuinely curious to see how it goes. I'm excited for that morning skate. I'm excited to see what kind of questions he's asked, how he answers them. Of course, one of the most tough moments that I've seen, or disappointing, I should say, rough things that I've covered for the Avalanche, was early in the 21-22 season when they were honoring Pierre Lacroix, a close, close friend of Patrick Waugh. Peter Forsberg was there. Adam Foote was there. Of course, Eric Lacroix was there. And they all held a press conference in the media room following the first period. But Patrick Waugh wasn't there. Patrick Waugh, who Pierre Lacroix acquired after being his agent for so many years, who Pierre Lacroix acquired in 1995 and led to two Stanley Cups, wasn't there the night Pierre Lacroix was honored and a banner was raised to the rafters honoring the architect of the first two Stanley Cups. And Patty wasn't there. And of course, it is because 5 years before that, the Avalanche and Patrick Waugh ended on bad terms. He was probably coaching the Quebec Ramparts. It would have been hard for him to come out anyway, but you know he would have made time for it had things not been funky at the time between him and the team. So I'm really excited to see Patrick Waugh tomorrow. I'm really excited to see how that plays out. And I'm really excited to see how the Avalanche respond. It sounds like Georgiev's going to get the start. Let's see how he does. And we'll see how the Avalanche do, because 0-2 is concerning. 0-3 as a whole. You got to win that game. You won 32 times at Ball Arena last year. You're already 0-1, and it's against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You got to find a way to bounce back. And it starts Monday against the New York Islanders. So with that, I'm going to put an end to the show here. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little hearts. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out ya.